The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. Nothing beats a weekend away with the family in the great outdoors, whether it's camping, hiking, river rafting, or anything in between. With third-row seating, nobody is left out. The entire family can experience the thrill together. And nobody wants a dead phone. Available dual wireless charging pads make it so nobody gets stuck and we can check our fantasy baseball teams together. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast from CBS Sports.
Oh, and first pitch crushing! Deep left field! This is what it is! Welcome on!
Got a fantasy question? Email fantasybaseball at cbsi.com. Get ready to win your league.
Where fantasy becomes reality.
Now, here's Frank, Scott, and Chris.
What a day for returns. Max Scherzer, Nick Lodolo, and me. Welcome in to Fantasy Baseball Today on Wednesday, July 6th. Frank Stanfill joined by Chris Towers. Today on the show, we'll break down Max Scherzer's return. Red Sox prospect Brian Bello is getting the call. Take a look at him. The drop-o-meter. I've got a new segment. Did you know? Just some random stats and fun facts about players doing something of note recently. But before we get into all the baseball talk, oh my goodness gracious, of course, coming up, Chris, happy belated birthday, buddy. How you doing?
Thank you. I'm good. I'm 34. I would be the oldest player in baseball by 7 years. Or that's what it feels like anyway.
The oldest player in softball. The oldest player in softball. That's you.
I I have realized I am the oldest player on both my softball and flag football teams. So I'm the weird old guy now in my life. So that's fun. But no, it's good. You know, watch some fireworks. Tried to make my sad dog feel better about the scary fireworks, which is just continuing to go on. I literally just heard one as I said that. So It's rough times for dogs, like the days leading up to and coming out of July 4th, but I think he'll be okay. I'm okay. Congratulations on getting married.
Boom.
It was a very fun wedding. If you how's the ring feel?
You know, someone asked me today, they're like, are you typing with the ring on? Because I don't ever wear a ring. And I will say that was the first thing that I noticed. Typing on a computer with a ring is very weird. So I'm still trying to get used to that, but so far so good.
Here, for those of you watching, I've got a little video of Frank dancing to some Polish tunes. He had some moves.
It was a good time. I don't remember that video, but I'm happy you took it and I'm happy you posted it on Twitter. For those watching on YouTube, you just got a nice little kick. Anyway, let's finally talk about baseball.
Oh my goodness gracious.
All right. Oh my goodness gracious. We'll start with you, Chris. Who do you have?
I'm going to go with Max. Max Scherzer. You know, it's been a big few days for Max's. You had Stranger Things, Max, you know, big part of Volume 2. I don't know if you've watched it yet, Frank, but it's
no spoiler.
Very good.
I have watched it, but for the sake of the audience, no spoilers.
But it's very, very good. And she plays a big role, and Max Scherzer played a big role for the New York Mets today in his return from that oblique injury, and he looked amazing. He averaged 94.6 miles per hour. This fastball was actually up a mile per hour from his season average, 15 swings and misses. He said he was aiming for six innings or 90 pitches. He ended up needing only 79 to get through six shutout. It was a soft landing, 11 strikeouts, and you know, we always talk about when it's a guy coming back from injury, a lot of the times you want to give them like a start to get right and get their feet under them. You don't want to do that with Max Scherzer. He's too good to ever not have in your lineup, especially in a matchup against the Reds. And I mean, look, I don't know if you can just throw Max Scherzer back in the top five now that he's healthy, but he's probably going to be a top five pitcher when he's healthy. So, yeah, I'm throwing him right back in the top 10 at the very least.
Yeah, I think I was ready to just move him back into the top three, right, where he was before the injury up there with Corbin Burns and Gerrit Cole. It's kind of a tier of their own right there. And then we get into like Verlander and Zach Wheeler. And look, obviously Sandy Alcantara, we'll talk about him in just a little bit. The strikeout
rate. Shane O'Mac.
Of course, yeah. I think there is a pretty clear top six or seven starting pitchers right now in fantasy baseball. And it includes all of those names that I just mentioned. But this was a fantastic return for Max Scherzer again. Six shutout, 11 Ks, 15 swinging strikes, velo up, ERA down to 2.26, just picking up right where he left off. The biggest thing for him is now he just needs to stay healthy. He needs to show us that he can remain healthy. Obviously a little bit older, getting up there. But when he's on the mound, he's obviously still one of the top, I don't know, might be top three starting pitchers, might be top six or seven.
Might be the best starting pitcher in baseball still.
He might be. Let's talk about Sandy Alcantara, who I've already mentioned has now
might
gone.
Might be the best starting pitcher in baseball.
This is crazy. He has gone 7+ innings in 11 straight starts. He was up against the Angels on Tuesday. He goes 8 shutout, 2 hits, 0 walks, 10 strikeouts, and the swinging strikes were here in this one. 18 swinging strikes on 107 pitches, 10 on the changeup. Chris, what's even crazier about the start is he did not have his slider. He couldn't throw it for strikes, 9% CSW overall on that pitch in this one, and still has one of his best starts of the season. And of course, the Marlins tried their best to blow this game. Tanner Scott had the bases loaded in the ninth inning with a 2-run lead. He did allow a run to score, but ultimately walks away with the win. Sandy now has 9 wins on the season, second most in the National League. That actually ties his career high, and we're about halfway.
Actually, I'm stunned that he has 9 wins. As someone who has watched most of his starts and follows the Marlins, like, I'm actually shocked that he has that many wins, because it feels like there have been so many situations where the Marlins have just blown amazing starts by him. But yeah, I mean, he is what, 6-7-1 during this stretch of 11 starts with at least 7 innings. Yeah, I mean, look, he's not the strikeout guy, so that's what keeps him from being in the top, I don't know, 2 or 3 or 5, whatever you want to define it as, but he's pitching as well as anyone in baseball, and he's pitching as well as anyone as you possibly can without being an elite strikeout pitcher, because his control's been incredible. He's got a walk rate, I believe, under 5% now. It might be under 4%, actually, now that he's through this start, over this 11-start stretch. He's just been outrageously good. I don't think he's this good moving forward, obviously. I don't think he's a 1.5 ERA or a 1.8, whatever it is, for the season even, but yeah, Sandy, someone I was very, very skeptical about for a long time, but he is literally just different from everyone in the best way possible.
Yeah, I can't believe I've been talking about it. We've been talking about him for 2 to 3 minutes, and I haven't even said it yet. Sandy. I mean, the guy, like, he's just absolutely crushing it right now. Someone did ask me a fair question on Twitter about whether or not this workload can catch up to him, Chris. And I just pulled up the innings pitch leaders since 2019. Sandy Alcantara is second on that list behind only Zach Wheeler. And I think the fact that, look, what he's doing right now is kind of like unprecedented in baseball today, going as deep as he is consistently. But I think because he's not done it to this level, but he's done it like kind of close to this level, I'm not really as worried about it. What do you think?
I mean, I'm trying to remember if Sandy Alcantara has missed time at the major league level because of an injury. I know in 2020 he missed time because of COVID, but I don't think he's actually missed any starts, at least since he became a full-time starter with the Marlins, due to injuries. In 2018, between the majors and minors, he had 28 starts. In 2017, he made 27 starts plus 3 relief appearances. So, yeah, I think, I don't know, he's a pitcher, so there's an inherent amount of risk involved, but he seems about as safe as anybody possibly could. And what is he on, like a 230 inning pace? I mean, this is more. He's not going to keep doing this, because, you know, that would require a sub-2 ERA, and like, I don't think he's going to keep doing that, but he's one of the most reliable sources of volume at the position, and it makes up for what he lacks in per inning strikeout numbers. He's a bona fide ace, a definite top 10 guy, and I think you can make a case that he's in that top six, like you mentioned.
All right, for sure. Yeah, Sandy Alcantara and Max Scherzer, you know those guys are awesome. You don't really need us to tell you that. How about Nick Lodolo, who was going up against Max Scherzer, also making his return to the Reds rotation in this start? 4 2/3 shutout, 3 hits, 3 walks. He had 8 strikeouts, 15 swinging strikes on 89 pitches. And according to Baseball Savant, he threw a slider in this start 33%. Earlier in the season, his only breaking pitch was a curveball. Maybe this is a classification issue. I don't know, but something that I'm going to monitor for like the days after this to see if they change it. But I thought that was interesting. And Nick Lodolo is 43% rostered. And I'm getting questions, Chris. Do I go out and add Nick Lodolo? I think it's a pretty good one. What do you think?
I do think it was the curveball. And it was just a classification error. And it was very good for him today. 8 swings and misses on 29 pitches. And it's been by far his best pitch this season. 193 expected WOBA entering today's start, 38% whiff rate. And that's going to have to be the recipe for success for him. You know, the comp that comes to mind was someone like Reed Detmers, who also has a very, very good curveball, but didn't really have the rest of the pitches. I think Lodolo is showing, you know, the upside that can come from that profile if you're spotting the fastball well and you're spotting the curveball well. But you know, he's also, we're dealing with relatively small sample sizes here. You know, with Lodolo, what's he made, 4 starts at the major league level? So there's still reasons to be skeptical, but I think there's plenty of upside here, and I definitely think Nick Lodolo is someone worth adding.
Do you think he's a must add?
No, I mean, not in like, I think he's probably not roster, not a must roster player in like a 10-team points league, but a 12-team points league, I think he's probably worth rostering. 12-team roto after this start, I would go ahead and say he's worth rostering. You know, hopefully he'll be able to build the pitch count moving forward and pitch a little deeper into games. But yeah, I think there's a lot to like about Lodolo.
All right, well, would you drop these pitchers for Nick Lodolo? We'll start with Michael Kopech. Let's fire up the drop-o-meter. He has not been the same since leaving a start with knee discomfort back in June. And on Tuesday, he gave up 6 runs over 4 2/3 innings, 4 walks, 4 homers allowed, the fastball and slider velo down 1 mile per hour each. And over his last 4 starts, Michael Kopech, a 6.86 ERA. The home runs are up, the walks are up, the strikeouts have been okay. But objectively speaking, Chris, 10% swinging strike rate, 4.3 walks per nine. These are quite bad numbers for Michael Kopech. Still 94% rostered. Where is he on the drop-o meter, 1 to 10?
I would say pretty low, below a 5 for sure, maybe a 3 or a 4. Just because I do think there's quite a bit of upside with Kopech, and it seems like if you look at, you know, what he's done this season, the biggest issue by far seems to be that his slider just hasn't been an effective pitch for him. And that's really tough because he's a 3-pitch guy, and 2 of the pitches are breaking balls. You know, today he had 3 whiffs on 29 sliders. He got hit really hard with a 99 mile per hour average exit velocity on 6 balls in play. So that's really bad. And for the season, Kopech has just a 19% whiff rate with his slider. That's a really poor number. I mean, that would be pretty middling for a fastball. His fastball actually has a 26% whiff rate. So, you know, when you look under the hood, like the results on the slider have still been pretty good. But I think when you look at the biggest issue for him, it's probably just that he has to be too fastball heavy in pretty much all counts. I mean, the fastball has been by far the biggest contributor to his strikeout numbers. He has 44 of his, gosh, I'm going to do some math on the top of my head, 63 strikeouts have come with that fastball. And that's really hard to do. Like, you have to be a really, really special pitcher. Carlos Rodon is kind of one of the few guys who can do that, and Kopech probably isn't that guy. So I think he probably needs to figure out whatever it is that's gone wrong with the slider. It's not breaking as much, and try to figure out a way for that pitch to be more effective if he's going to remain a viable starter. But I still think the upside is there for Kopech to be a very good starting pitcher. So I would try to avoid dropping him. I would rather have him than Lodolo.
All right, fair enough. That was the next question. What about Jamison Tyone? He's been slowing down as well. This time he was at the Pirates. 5 1/3 innings pitched, 5 strikeouts, 5 earned runs allowed. Excuse me. Last 6 starts for Jamison Tyone, 6.26 ERA, right around a strikeout per inning. It is actually surprising because earlier in the season he was not getting many strikeouts, but the walks, the BABIP, the home runs have all climbed for Jamison Tyone. He's still 96% rostered. Where does he fall on the drop-o-meter?
Yeah, I mean, I think the one thing to keep in mind with Tyone is, yes, he's getting closer to a strikeout per inning, but that's also because he's facing a lot of batters. He has a 1.38 whip, or he had a 1.38 whip in the month of June. So a 30%, 30 strikeouts in 33 1/3 innings, that sounds okay, but it's actually, you know, more like a 21% strikeout rate, which is below average. So it's partially a function of him just facing so many batters. You see, today, 5 strikeouts in 5 1/3. Again, almost a strikeout per inning, but 5 on 22 batters. That's more like a 22% whiff rate or strikeout rate. So that's partially a function of just him pitching worse. And I think Tyone is, it's totally fine to drop him. I don't think he's all that good. Even when things were going well, I wasn't buying it. The ERA is still fine, but the expected ERA more like league average, and I think he'll probably be league average-ish, maybe a tad worse. So the kind of the only place he might stand out is wins.
All right, would you drop Jamison Tyone for Nick Lodolo?
I'd be fine with that. I think Tyone is very droppable.
Yeah, I think based on what you just said, like Tyone is going to get more wins than Nick Lodolo. I think we can say that pretty consistently because Lodolo pitches for the Reds. But, I mean, if you're chasing ERA, whip, strikeouts, I think that there's more upside with Lodolo.
And even then, I mean, they both make 16 starts the rest of the season. I don't know. You figure Tyone probably wins 2 to 3 more starts. I don't know how big of a, you know, impact that's going to be.
All right. Well, would we drop either of those for one of the top pitching prospects in the game who will make his debut for the Red Sox on Wednesday? That is Brian Bello, and it's actually spelled B-E-L-L-O. So if you're looking for him on whatever fantasy site you play, it looks like it's Bello, but it's actually Bello. And if you listen to our FBT and Fives over the weekend, you know Scott's been talking about Bello for quite some time because he is just lighting it up in the minors this season. 2.33 ERA, 104 whip, 114 strikeouts over 85 innings pitched. The walks are a little high, but 12K per nine, 63% ground ball rate, 16% swinging strike rate. I mean, Chris, basically every metric you look at, Bello is incredibly impressive and interesting. He's 35% rostered. What do you think about dropping either Tyone or Kopech to take a shot on Bello?
Totally fine dropping Tyone for him. The question with Bello, and I'm a little disappointed when I first saw his name, I thought it was Brian Bello, and made me think of Brian Fellow, Safari Planet from Saturday Night Live, for those of you who remember that in the mid-2000s, which is one of my favorite skits. Alas, we won't be able to make those references. The question with Bello is whether he's going to be in the rotation long-term. He's coming up right now because Michael Wacha was scratched from a start, and you know he's dealing with some dead arms, so I don't know how long-term that is. And then Chris Sale, it sounds like he's going to return to the rotation next week. So this could be a situation where Bello really just makes one appearance. On the other hand, they have was it Connor Siebold who's made a couple starts for them? Mm-hmm.
They have a fellow named Josh Winkowski who's been starting for them.
It's possible that if Bello comes up and lights it up like he's perfectly capable of, I think it's possible that he will be in the rotation moving forward. And so that upside is worth chasing when it comes to dropping someone like Tyone. Yeah, I think that's an easy call. Bello, there have been, you know, I think the scouts have kind of looked at him as a future reliever in the long term because he got a very violent delivery. But, you know, the walks are a little high, but not so high that it's alarming. He's got like a 36% strikeout rate in the minors right now with an ERA in the low to mid twos. And scouting reports tout a 3-pitch mix with a fastball, slider, and changeup with potentially all 3 pitches rating out as plus. So it's a really exciting profile that, you know, Bello can bring to the table, and I'm excited to see what he can do in his major league debut.
Who would you rather add, Bello or Nick Lodolo?
I think probably Bayo, just because it's one of those opportunity cost things where it's more likely that Bayo gets called up. Like, Lodolo was good in his first start, but he wasn't so good that I think he's going to be hugely rostered moving forward.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm looking at the roster resource page right now for the Red Sox, and I forgot they have Nathan Eovaldi, who's going to return at some point too. So,
yeah, I think he threw a bullpen session.
Yeah, on Tuesday.
Yeah,
this is tough. I agree that if
Bayo finds a way, right?
If Bayo pitches well, he's going to remain. Like, the Red Sox can use quality starting pitching, and again, like, he has this type of upside. There's a reason why they're calling him up. So it's really close between him and Lodolo. I think I would lean with Bayo as well, but there's a lot to like there. I agree. I would drop Tyon. Would you drop Kopech for Bayo?
I would prefer not to. Yeah, I think there's similar upside there.
Yep. All right, let's move over to some waiver wire hitter decisions in shallow leagues. It feels like I bring these names up a lot, but they're still available in, you know, it's got to be either 10 or 12 team leagues. So Roddy Tellez went 1-for-3, hit his 17th home run. He now has 6 homers over his last 9 games. He's 77% rostered. Nathaniel Lowe went 2-for-3, hit his 12th home run. He's now batting .282 overall. Like, this batting average just continues to creep up for Nate Lowe. And since the start of June, 31 games, he's hitting .311, 9 homers, a lot less ground balls. He's 56% rostered. And then Alex Kirilloff went 3-for-4 with a double dong, 3 RBI here on Tuesday. 18 games since returning for Kirilloff. He's hitting .306, 3 homers, 17 RBI, and hitting the ball extremely hard, 70% rostered. Chris, how would you rank those three? Roddy Tellez, Nathaniel Lowe, and Alex Kirilloff.
I would go with Kirilloff, Lowe, and Tellez. I think I've been pretty skeptical of Lowe. And, you know, I don't think, like, you know, his numbers since the start of June are much better than his overall numbers. I don't think he's a .311 hitter moving forward. But the expected stats mostly back up, like, a .280-ish batting average with decent pop. And I think that's what he can give you moving forward. So I think him and Tellez are fairly similar players, but I don't know. I think Lowe and Tellez are very, very close, but I'll give Lowe a little bit of an edge right now just because we've been faked out by Tellez so far this season already once. So, you know, I think he's going to remain streaky, whereas, you know, maybe Lowe can be a little bit more consistent, but I think they're similar players. Kirilloff has a little more all-around upside, I think.
Would you drop someone like Jared Walsh or Joey Votto for any of these names?
I would be hesitant to do it with Votto, but I know I'm increasingly on an island there. I know there's a lot of frustration with him. Walsh, I think, is perfectly fine to drop. I think he's very clearly just a guy. You know, last year's overall numbers, I think, overstate what kind of hitter he is.
All right. I was quickly pulling up what Joey Votto has done since returning back in the middle of May. .257 batting average, 6 homers, 22 RBI, and that's not including whatever he did on Tuesday, which I think that game ended 1-0, so probably not much. Yeah. But
certainly no RBI or runs.
He's hitting the ball really hard since returning, too.
Yeah.
Joey Votto is.
Yeah, I still think there's enough positive in Joey Votto's underlying skill set, whereas Walsh, too many strikeouts, still can't hit lefties, so I'm more okay dropping him.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's move over to two outfielders in, I guess we could say, medium-sized leagues based on how rostered they are right now. Garrett Cooper went 1-for-3, hit his 6th home run. This guy's hitting .315 with an .854 OPS. I mean, he's been really solid. You wish there was more pop there. Hits the ball very hard. Just too many ground balls, as we've seen in the past. Garrett Cooper is 45% rostered. And then someone I know you like a lot, Chris, Jarren Duran, went 2-for-4 with his 5th stolen base. He is batting .329 early on. He's been leading off for the Red Sox. Interestingly enough, for someone who, I don't know, maybe we unjustifiably look at him as like a slap hitter because he's fast and he's like a leadoff hitter, but he's hitting the ball hard, over 90 mile per hour average exit velocity. He's leading off, like I mentioned, is struggling against lefties so far, 3-for-19 against them. 55% rostered is Jarren Duran. Who would you rather have between those two, Cooper, Duran?
Duran, just the stolen bases give him, I think, more overall upside, but Cooper, I mean, he's played now 174 games since the start of 2020. He's got a .297 average and an .846 OPS. Like, I think he's just a good hitter. You know, not as much pop as you might think, only 20 home runs, and obviously he's only played 174 games over the past three seasons, really 2 3/8 or whatever the 2020 season is, but still, he's had a lot of trouble staying healthy is the headline there, but he's been healthy this season. He's playing pretty much every day. And, I think Garrett Cooper is a very solid starting option.
Okay. Would you take Cooper or Duran in a points league?
There I would go Cooper. Yeah.
Okay. It's still close just because I love leadoff hitters for good offenses in points leagues, just because more volume leads to more opportunity to score fantasy points. Obviously, it's not the greatest profile for a points league hitter, but yeah, it's still close. I think I would go with Duran, but that one is much closer. In a one catcher league, MJ Melendez has 3 homers over his last 2 games. He's 69% rostered, could be out there in some, you know, 10, maybe 12 team points leagues. Mitch Garver, back-to-back games with a homer. He now has 3 home runs over his last 7 games, and he's 56% rostered. Has noted that he's playing through a forearm injury that he will need surgery for eventually. Chris, which catcher would you rather add if you need one, MJ Melendez or Mitch Garver?
I think I would go with Garver, but it's really close. I'm fine with either of them as a fringe one catcher option, but Garver's just a little more proven. And Melendez, you know, before the last couple of games, he was ice cold. Yep. I think he had gone like 30 days without hitting a home run or something like that. So I lean towards Garver. I think they're similar players, though. The primary thing that you're going to get out of them is pop.
Any interest in these hitters anywhere? Derek Hall, this guy actually looks like he might be pretty good. He went 3-for-5 with a double, 3 runs scored. He's only played 6 games so far, but he's batting .304, and the batted ball distribution is very equal across the board. It's not like he hits too many fly balls or too many ground balls or anything. I worry about him against lefties. We'll see what happens there, but 23% rostered. He's been interesting so far. Chris, what do you think about adding Derek Hall anywhere?
Yeah, I think Hall's interesting. I don't know if, you know, adding him everywhere would be the way that I would go, because like you said, there's still a question about what he's going to do against lefties, whether he's even going to play. He hasn't necessarily shown like outrageous raw power. And I think that's kind of the question, is like, are the physical tools there to match up to what he, you know, the pretty solid numbers he put up in the minors. But yeah, based on what he's done so far, I think he's worth a look.
Eric Haas has 4 home runs over his last 7 games. He's playing every other day right now for the Detroit Tigers, which out of nowhere, offense has kind of been coming around for them. I guess you could thank Riley Green and Javier Baez for that. Eric Haas, 9% rostered. Chris, are you looking at him in any of your 2 catcher leagues?
Yeah, he's fine for 2 catcher leagues. I mean, with 2 catcher leagues, Eric Haas is kind of the what you get from your number 2 catcher in a lot of ways. Like last season, he hit .231 with 22 homers, 61 RBI, 48 runs. That's kind of like a 65th percentile outcome for a number 2 catcher in most often. So I think he can be that. I think he can be a decent number 2 catcher, but he's certainly not a difference maker.
All right, the last one here is Sam Haggerty, who went 3-for-4 with a sock and a shoe on Tuesday. His first home run, his second stolen base of the season. He is 0% rostered, so widely available. Chris, I mean, I guess it would have to be AL only or 15-team, 5 outfielder leagues. But if you just kind of do like the fun with small sample sizes things, Sam Haggerty is kind of interesting. What do you think?
Yeah, the thing that I would say to kind of throw some cold water on it is just that Kyle Lewis, I believe, began his rehab assignment either yesterday or today. So sounds like he could be back from I think he has a concussion, so he could be back any day now. So that might make playing time hard to come by for Sam Haggerty. So that I would guess he's not going to play too often.
All right. Fair enough.
I think Mitch Haniger's getting close ish to coming back.
I think he's like a late July guy, or maybe post All-Star break, something like that.
He's like hoping to start a rehab assignment in the next like week or so, hopefully.
I think he's been out since April with an ankle sprain. I mean, this must have been the worst ankle sprain of all time, because
he's had some bad luck the last few years.
Oh, for sure. And for anyone who doesn't know, look into the history of of Mitch Haniger's injuries, and you'll know exactly what we're talking about. But
yeah, he started like running around the bases, and you know, sounds like he could be you know, cleared soon-ish.
As of June 30th, he hasn't progressed to running at full speed yet. That is Mitch Haniger. So we shall see. Before we hit the break, just want to remind everybody that if you are listening to us on Spotify, please help us out with a 5-star rating. If you listen to FBT and 5 on Spotify as well, we could use some 5-star ratings with that podcast. It's our 5-minute podcast. Download and follow wherever you listen to this podcast. But look, I understand we're getting closer to fantasy football season. Maybe you don't have as much time to listen to the full-length podcast. We hope you stick with us all season long, obviously. But if you listen to the 5-minute podcast, help us out. 5-star rating with that one as well. Let's hit a break, and we'll be back right after this.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
Check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss, 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
The news and notes. Juan Soto has now missed 2 straight while he recovers from a left calf injury. Cross your fingers, get back on track. Jacob DeGrom is penciled to make his second rehab start Friday at Single A. He recorded 5 outs, all via the strikeout, in his first rehab start on Sunday, and apparently came away perfectly fine. He said the shoulder is 100%, so let's hope so. Honestly, can we get Jacob DeGrom back on the field, like, in a Mets uniform? It would just would make baseball much better in general. Yeah. Whenever he's out there, to have him and Scherzer as a 1-2 punch, it would be awesome. So please, let's make that happen. Kevin Gausman, dealing with an ankle injury, did not throw his scheduled bullpen on Tuesday, and it sounds like he won't make his next scheduled start on Thursday. That hasn't been confirmed, but it's not looking good right now. Bobby Witt Jr. left Tuesday after getting hit on the hand by a pitch. X-rays were negative. More tests coming on Wednesday. And we really cannot lose him because third base is not a great position. And I think he's on like a 25-25 pace right now. So he's actually been very good, despite a lower batting average. Craig Kimbrel underwent a CT scan on his back Tuesday. Yency Almonte converted the save for the Dodgers on Monday. Chris Taylor has been diagnosed with a small fracture in his foot. His timeline has yet to be determined, but this could open the door for Dodgers prospect Miguel Vargas, who is crushing it in the minors this season. 294 batting average, 13 homers, 9 steals. He mainly plays third base, but has also played first, second, and left field this season. So he kind of would fit that mold that Chris Taylor is in for this team. And he's widely available, Chris. What do you think about speculatively adding Miguel Vargas?
Yeah, it's interesting because Mookie Betts did play his first game at second base on Monday. So that's going to be part of the plan for him. Whether, you know, hopefully he'll get enough to get to 5 appearances and have that second base eligibility, because that would be really big for one of the weaker positions. But yeah, Vargas, I think there's a chance that he gets called up. The problem is the Dodgers have been more than happy to call their top prospects up and then not play them every day if they think that gives them the best chance to win. So not necessarily a guarantee that he comes up and makes an immediate impact. So that's the one thing to keep in mind.
Yeah, I mean, they're running a little thin here right now. They've got like Jake Lamb playing left field, and they've been using Trace Thompson, who, I mean, I think to his credit, he's actually played well for the Dodgers. But yeah, obviously
he hits lefties well.
Miguel Vargas would be much more interesting if he gets the call. So if you have a spot on your bench and you just want to take a shot, again, the name there, Miguel Vargas, 26% rostered. Gene Segura had his pins removed from his broken right index finger. He's still not expected back until mid to late August. I don't think you want to stash him yet. unless you have unlimited IL spots, but just a name to remember there. Anthony Rizzo was scratched Tuesday due to lower back stiffness, which is worrisome because he's dealt with back injuries the past couple of years. So we'll follow that closely with Rizzo. Eloy Jimenez concluded his rehab assignment and rejoined the White Sox, but hasn't been activated yet. He has not played a game since April 23rd with that torn hamstring. Kyle Hendricks left his start due to right shoulder soreness. Chris Archer was placed in the IL with left hip tightness, retroactive to July 2nd. Josh Winder started in his place on Tuesday instead. Edward Cabrera completed a 25-pitch bullpen session on Tuesday. He was placed on the IL with right elbow tendonitis on June 15th, but has also been dealing with some kind of personal issue, which I have seen zero details about. Chris, I don't know if you know anything about this Cabrera situation, but I have still been stashing him in some leagues because I was very aggressive in adding him in Fab. I don't know if that's the right answer here, but do you know anything about what's going on with Cabrera?
No, we mentioned this on the Mailbag podcast on Monday. I think that the only thing I've seen really was Craig Mish very like cryptically saying that it, what's going on privately doesn't match the public statements or something to that effect. So I have no idea, but it's a good thing that good sign that he was able to throw a bullpen session and it seems to be on the way back.
All right. Both Jazz Chisholm and Jorge Soler have been taking part in mobility and core strengthening work at the Marlins spring training facility. Dodgers pitching prospect Ryan Pepio was called up to start on Tuesday. He allowed one run over five innings, struck out six. I think the bigger part of his stat line is the fact that he only walked one because control has been a major issue for him. He's 9% rostered. And I think normally, Chris, we would want to add someone like this, but I think it's just going to be a spot start. So what do you think?
Yeah, that would be my expectation. That's how they've used him so far this season. And, you know, yeah, the one walk is a huge thing for Pepio because he's got really good stuff. It's just control has been a constant issue for him. And that's what we've seen so far from him in these spot starts. It's just been kind of iffy control. So not necessarily someone I'm running out to add right now.
All right. Last bit of news here. John Birdie was out of the lineup on Monday and Tuesday due to, quote, lower extremity tightness. So
one of the great upsets of the season, actually, is that John Birdie didn't get to play against Noah Syndergaard. That is that is just so upsetting. Do you know who stole a base against Noah Syndergaard today?
I do. Jesus Aguilar.
Not just Jesus Aguilar. Billy Hamilton also. That's less surprising.
Yes, it is.
But just Billy Hamilton's on the Marlins. But yeah, Jesus Aguilar, first career stolen base. He was, I believe, the only player in Major League history with 100-plus home runs and no stolen bases before this. So this was disappointing that he's no longer the lone member of that club.
This was his 701st career game for Jesus Aguilar, and he picks up his first steal against Noah Syndergaard. Something we pointed out in the past, like, if you see Syndergaard on the schedule and you have an aggressive team in terms of, you know, someone that's willing to run and you need steals, you should definitely play that player because Noah Syndergaard is absolutely terrible at holding opposing runners on. Did you know? Let's take a look at some fun facts and stats. Julio Rodriguez, who admittedly we talk about a lot because he is awesome, he went 2-for-5 on Tuesday with his 21st stolen base. Did you know? Since May 1st, 62 games, he is batting .300, 15 homers, 12 steals. That is a 36 homer, 29 stolen base pace over 150 games. And Chris, I've seen this has kind of been the talk of town the past couple of days on fantasy baseball Twitter, is that Julio Rodriguez, I think more so in category leagues than any other leagues, could be the first overall pick in fantasy next year. What do you think about that?
I think that's probably a little too early to start saying that. Like, as awesome as he is, like, let's not forget that he's basically doing a decent Fernando Tatis impression. And we do expect Fernando Tatis to be back at some point in the next couple of weeks and presumably be healthy for the start of next season. So it would be really hard for me to say after 70 some odd games that Julio Rodriguez has surpassed Fernando Tatis when Fernando Tatis is 2 years older than him and more proven. So that's not a knock. And I think that's the comp. Like, you're hoping that Julio Rodriguez can continue to be the kind of guy who's just so, such a special hitter that it makes up for, you know, lacking plate discipline. But I certainly wouldn't take him over Fernando Tatis at this point.
All right. I think in a category...
To name one, Ronald Acuna.
Yeah, I was just going to bring up...
There's some pretty good players out there.
I was just going to bring up Acuna, who on the season is hitting .285. He's got 17 steals in 48 games. That is just a ridiculous pace in terms of running. Yeah. The power has been a little bit lacking.
A little lacking.
Only 7 home runs, but...
But
my guess would be that the further he gets away from this knee injury, the more we start to see the power come back in that lower half specifically.
And rest assured, we're going to get Julio Rodriguez in those first two rounds. We didn't do it last time when we redrafted. Scott wouldn't let us go put him in there, but we're getting Julio Rodriguez in the first two rounds at least.
Hey, he might be in the first round.
Yeah.
I don't know about first overall yet, but he is... He's getting there. That is Julio Rodriguez. No June, no problem for Kyle Schwarber, who had a double dong on Tuesday, now has 25 home runs total, and he leads Major League Baseball with 14 home runs since the start of June. Did you know, over the last 28 days, Schwarber is the number one hitter in both head-to-head points and category leagues? Did you know it, Chris?
That sounds about right. I didn't know it, but I believe it.
He has been amazing. Again, Kyle Schwarber leading off for the Phillies.
He's tremendous.
Regardless of no Bryce Harper in the lineup, he's getting it done. It's, you know, as we get into these warmer months, it seems like that's when Kyle Schwarber really starts to heat up. And that was the case last year, and that's been the case so far this year. I think we are well on our way to a 40 home run season, assuming that Kyle Schwarber could stay healthy. Byron Buxton stole a base. Would you look at that? Did you know this was his first steal since April 11th? I know he's been dealing with a sore knee off and on all year. He still ranks 91st percentile in sprint speed, according to StatCast.
Yeah.
Chris, really? Since April 11th? It's kind of crazy.
That is surprising. The good news is he's crushing baseballs still. So it's not like you're exactly disappointed in his production. I mean, .222 batting average, I guess, is a little disappointing. But yeah, I mean... I think the stolen bases, you know, maybe this is a sign that he's starting to feel a little better, in which case maybe, you know, hopefully he'll start running more, because he's certainly capable of being a big stolen base guy. Just not, doesn't do it.
Austin Riley went 3-for-4 with a double and his 21st home run of the season. Did you know that Austin Riley is another one of these Aaron Judge, Yordan Alvarez type hitters? I did not know this because I looked at the StatCast page. 97th percentile average exit velocity, 99th percentile hard hit rate, 91st percentile barrel rate. I knew that he hit the ball hard, Chris, but I didn't know that he was like upper echelon in terms of crushing baseballs. That is Austin Riley.
Yeah, he's been awesome. 505 expected wOBA on contact, strikeout rate right around where it was last season. That's the one thing that's keeping him from like the upper echelon of hitters overall. But yeah, he's really good.
I have that conversation from the preseason, Chris, just ringing in my head of me and you, like, you know, Austin Riley might just be a Jag. Who knows, man?
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah. Sometimes, look. Sometimes we say, look, you say several hundred things over the course of an off season. Dozens of them are going to sound very stupid.
Very stupid, indeed. And I like bringing them up because, obviously, transparency. And, you know, look, you have to learn from your mistakes, too, right? It's the only way to get better at really anything but fantasy baseball.
Here's the problem, though. Is, you know who could have been that guy?
Who's that?
And who a lot of people thought was going to be that guy? It's Tyler O'Neill, who was also a StatCast standout. So, you know, it's hard to know what lesson to take from that yet, at least.
That's fair.
So, but Riley is awesome. He's a very good player.
Some pitching leftovers from Tuesday's action. Noah Syndergaard's strikeouts are up over his last two outings. He was at the Marlins, 5 innings, 2 runs, 8 strikeouts to 0 walks. He had 11 swinging strikes in this one. And I noticed that the slider usage has been up over his last two starts as well, at least 34% in each of those. And he's right around 19% for the season. So, Chris, are you starting to get a little bit more optimism that maybe we're starting to get the strikeouts from Noah Syndergaard once again?
It's weird because the slider hasn't actually been a particularly good swing and miss pitch for him this season. It's at 26% entering today. That's, you know, better than his fastballs. So I guess if he's trading fastballs for sliders, that would be a good thing. But it still doesn't look like the, you know, it's not the same pitch that it used to be. He used to average 92 miles an hour with his fastball. And obviously his velocity as a whole is down. It's down about 3.5 miles per hour from his peak, but the slider velocity is down about 8 miles per hour from his peak. So it's just a different pitch than it used to be. And I think that's probably, limiting the effectiveness of it. So I still think Noah Syndergaard's more along the lines of a fine pitcher than someone that I must have on my roster. I'm still pretty pessimistic about him.
All right. What about Jose Quintana, who has allowed 2 earned runs or fewer in 3 straight? He was going up against the Yankees. He gave up 1 run over 5 innings, 7 strikeouts to 0 walks. He lowers his ERA to 3.33, and he's done a very good job preventing home runs this season. This is Jose Quintana, and he's got a career-high 12% swinging strike rate, so actually pretty interesting. 23% rostered. Chris, how does Quintana compare to like Lodolo and Bayo, who we mentioned earlier, as waiver wire pitchers?
Less interesting than those guys, I think. I would rather take the chance on Lodolo or Bayo than Quintana, but he's starting to be worth, I think he's worth rostering in a 12-team league at least.
Would you drop Jameson Taillon for Jose Quintana?
I'm fine with that, yeah.
Okay, last one I wanted to mention here, Christopher Sanchez put together a solid start for the Phillies, filling in for Ranger Suarez. He went 5 shutout, only had 2 strikeouts, very heavy with the changeup in this start. He uses 3 pitches, sinker, changeup, slider, and in the minors this year, he was performing quite well. He gets a ton of ground balls. We're talking like every level, 60% plus on the ground ball rate. Chris, I guess in very deep leagues, do you see anything here with Christopher Sanchez, who does have SPARP eligibility?
It would have to be like an AL only. I think even in your head-to-head points leagues, the rosters are typically too shallow for me to think that Christopher Sanchez is worth much attention, even as a SPARP. So, you know, maybe if he remains in the rotation and gets a 2-start week at some point, I guess maybe that would have been this week if it's not going to be the case. I don't have much interest in him.
All right, some hitting leftovers from Tuesday. Bobby Witt Jr., I mentioned earlier, went 2-for-5 with his 12th home run. He also has 12 steals. That is a 25 homer, 25 steal pace for the season. Alex Bregman went 3-for-5 with his 10th home run. And over his last 16 games, he's batting .357, 4 homers, and hitting the ball much harder. So you love to see that for Alex Bregman. And you love to see Seiya Suzuki. Earlier in the season, got off, like really the first week, he was amazing. And then after that, really, really slowed down, was on the IL for a long time, returned, and his first 2 games back, 2 hits in each game, a home run. On Monday was an inside the park home run off of Josh Hader, actually. And then on Tuesday, of course, it was a traditional home run. So I think a nice bounce back so far for Seiya Suzuki. Cedric Mullins went 3-for-4 with 2 walks, 2 runs, and 3 RBI, including a walk-off RBI single. And since the start of June, I've mentioned this a few times, Mullins has been much better. Not much power, but he's hitting .319, 13 doubles, 5 steals, hitting the ball a little bit harder, making more contact. He's been doing a good job getting back on track, leading off for the Orioles. This one I think that we should expand on a little bit more, Chris, because I saw you tweet about him recently, and I hadn't realized this, but Wander Franco, he went 1-for-2 with 3 walks, 3 runs, and his 5th stolen base. It's been a weird season for him, one where he was out a long time with his quad injury. He's hitting .261. He's got 5 homers, 5 steals in 55 games. He doesn't walk that much. Like, he doesn't walk as much as you think. He makes a lot of contact. His batted ball distribution, very similar to last year. Hits probably too many ground balls. And his max EV is impressive, but his actual average exit velocity is not. And he hasn't been good against right-handed pitching so far in his career. A sub-700 OPS bat as a switch hitter. It's kind of just been a weird season so far for Wander Franco, who many, you know, had pegged as a breakout. What do you think?
Yeah, and early on in the season, it looked like there were real reasons to believe he was breaking out. You know, you mentioned that max exit velo. There were some small sample sizes, but he was hitting the ball very hard early on. And I do wonder how much of this is just the quad injury kind of derailing him, because his numbers were better before the injury. And, you know, there seems to be some bad luck involved. His expected batting average is .308. His actual batting average is .261. So I do think there's probably room for improvement there. I'm not sure if, like, maybe he's being especially hurt by the shift. There's something there maybe. As a right-handed hitter, his WOBA against the shift is really low, but I think the sample size is pretty small there. So I think it's too early to say definitively one way or the other. It might be a situation where maybe he swings too much. You know, maybe that's the case. Maybe there's just like he's got a really high chase rate. He's in the 18th percentile in chase rate. He's got a 33.7% chase rate. He swings in the strike zone 76% of the time, which is, it doesn't seem like that high of a rate, but it could be a situation where he could just benefit a little bit from being more selective. 54% swing rate overall. You know, he probably is swinging at some pitches that he shouldn't. And maybe there's a difference between aggressiveness and discipline that he needs to find a balance with.
Mm. So the second coming of Vladimir Guerrero, huh? Well, look, no one else is Vladimir Guerrero, but it sounds a lot like Vladimir Guerrero just based on being that aggressive with your swing, chasing pitches, but also this uncanny ability to make contact. So the profile just kind of makes sense in my head, but of course, Wander Franco has a long way to go. Max Muncy had two hits on Tuesday, including a sock and a shoe, his eighth home run, his first steal. Don't really expect Max Muncy to run, but some signs lately, last seven games, .261 batting average, three home runs, and we need to see something. So let's go, Max Muncy. Chris Bryant he picked up a second hit. So 2-for-4 with his first home run with the Rockies. First home run on July 5th. I know he's missed a lot of time, but like whoever thought they could have predicted this with Chris Bryant, geez, couldn't have been me. The calls of the bullpen, some bullpen updates for the Marlins. Tanner Scott walked 2 and gave up a run, but picked up his 10th save of the season. For the Orioles, I assume that Jorge Lopez was unavailable. He worked 3 of the last 4 days, and he allowed 5 earned runs in those 3 outings. The Orioles turned to Felix Bautista, who gave up a go-ahead home run to Corey Seager in this outing. And then on the other side, Joe Barlow enters in the bottom of the 9th with a 1-run lead. He gets the first 2 outs. He gives up a game-tying home run to who? Rougned Odor, of all people.
Yeah, that game was kind of bonkers The Orioles went up 4-0 early, and then it was just back and forth after that. Yeah. So
it really was an interesting game too, because the Orioles scored a run in each of the
7th, 8th, 9th, and 10th innings. Yeah.
Yeah, so they scored 3 runs in the 7th and 1 in the 8th.
Spencer Howard came up, and I was interested because his last start in the minors was really good. I think he had like 11 strikeouts, but he was bad again. I just don't think it's going to happen for him.
Not great from Spencer Howard. For the Pirates, David Bednar picked up his 13th save. I did see on the other side of that game, not that it matters much, but for the Yankees, Aroldis Chapman pitched in the, I guess it would have been 8th inning when they were down 5-2, and his velocity was way up. It was like 2 or 3 miles per hour up on his fastball, so just something to watch.
That's a good sign. Unless you have Clay Holmes, in which case, potentially not a good sign. I think it's probably okay.
Astros, just keep talking, Chris. It's cut me. I'm being honestly, just keep doing it. Rafael Montero gave up a run, but picked up his 6th save. Not sure where Ryan Pressly was in this outing. I read that he pitched on Sunday, and then he was warming up in the bullpen on Monday. So perhaps they just wanted to give him the night off. Sometimes they count warming up as like technically pitching. So I don't know, but we'll follow that. And then for Oakland, I saw that Lou Trevino picked up his 6th save, and he's only 24% rostered. So in deeper category leagues, I picked him up in a few 15-teamers last week. You know, with Danny Jimenez on the IL, it looks like Lou Trevino is the closer once again for the Oakland A's.
Again, Jimenez, I think, threw a bullpen session, but he's probably still a couple weeks away.
All right. How about to stream or not to stream? We'll start with Wednesday. David Peterson at the Reds. Graham Ashcraft versus the Mets. Glenn Otto at the Orioles. Spencer Watkins versus the Rangers. Brian Baio in his debut against the Rays. Alex Cobb at the Diamondbacks. And Mitch White versus the Rockies. That game is in Los Angeles.
I like Peterson, Cobb, and White all quite a bit, more than our typical streaming options. I think I would go Peterson, Cobb, and White in that order. And then, obviously, you know, I want to see what Baio looks like, but I'm interested in picking him up before he makes the start anyway.
All right. And then on Thursday, we have JT Brubaker at the Reds, Mike Minor versus the Pirates, Michael Lorenzen at the Orioles, Austin Gomber at the Diamondbacks, and Marco Gonzalez versus the Blue Jays.
I'm significantly less interested in any of these options than the previous three that I mentioned. I mean, Marco Gonzalez, like, he's pitching really well right now, or at least he's getting really good results right now, but I'm sorry. If Marco Gonzalez has a good start against Toronto and you don't have him in your lineup, I think you just eat it. Like, that's one that, like, I can't recommend him. I'm sorry.
Cue up the tweets, Chris. They're already in your inbox when it comes to Marco Gonzalez. I did just see this. I wanted to bring it up for the Dodgers. Obviously, Kimbrel dealing with this back injury. Yency Almonte got the save on Monday. That game just went final. Brewstar Graterol got the save on Tuesday. So if anything happens to Craig Kimbrel, perhaps we see a little bit of a committee approach here in the Dodgers bullpen. We're going to wrap there. For Chris, I am Frank. Thank you all for listening and watching Fantasy Baseball Today. We'll be back again tomorrow. Bye-bye.
On May 23rd.
I want to go back to normal.
What's normal?
The Paramount Plus original series, Evil Returns.
We've already hunted werewolves and demons.
And now what? A baby antichrist?
Okie dokie.
Prepare yourself.
You will not beat us.
For the end.
I have visions of hell.
Make it stop. Make it shut up.
You're not gonna survive this.
Evil, the final season. Streaming May 23rd. Only on Paramount+.